Entrepreneur Weekly interviews the brilliant leaders of today in order to provide a stepping stone of wisdom on the journey to personal business ownership. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Well, our first guest is a lady named Ruth King, well known as the Profitability Master and author of Profit or Wealth. What do you want? Well, I kind of want both. I guess one leads to the other. Ruth, welcome to the show. Doesn't one lead to the other, right?
It can lead to the other, but there's a lot of people who just think they have to be profitable and they don't have to build wealth. Story in point, a customer had three major clients who all went bankrupt on him in a week. He had been profitable for more than 10 years, but he didn't have the money to basically survive $1 million in lost receivables. Done. Finished.
Mm-hmm. Right. Which I think a lot of us get out over our skis every now and then, as they say. Yes. And, you know, it happened to me. They changed some laws about, it's been 20 some odd years ago. They changed some laws, which basically was like, I'm playing a game of ping pong and they hand me a bowling ball and say, everything stays the same, but now you got to whack this across the net. Right? It's like, wait a second, I can't do that. You know, so that happens. It's happened to me. It happens to all of us. It's going to happen to you someday out there listening. Things will change. Look what's going on in our world today. Things are changing. And you know, it's right now I am dealing with contractors and we're putting in a small restaurant and everybody's like, what? You're putting in a restaurant? Restaurants are all closed. Or the ones that aren't closed are basically where you just get your food to go, right? So I'm thinking, yes, but my restaurant is a grab and go. And that's exactly the point. Most people can't go into restaurants anymore. They don't want to. But they do want to eat out. They're hungry. They don't want to go all the way home. They don't want to take a sack lunch, which gets all, you know, soggy. So, you know, they still want to go food. So we put in a new restaurant that is a grab and go, and it's Hawaiian food. And I fell in love with these people from Hawaii that moved into our area. And I live in Oregon. You know what's happening in Oregon. Our whole state is on fire. Portland has been under siege for the last, you know, 100 and some odd days now. But I am probably in our town the only new restaurant in the year 2020 that is going to open, brand new. And I think to myself, people are like, you're crazy. What are you doing? No, there actually is a need. We're serving that need because people get hungry three times a day, maybe two times, depends on who you are. Point is, so you said a very important thing, profit or wealth. Now you can make profit, but if you don't put some away for a rainy day or a fiery day, in our case, smoky day, that thing can happen that unsets you, that knocks you off your skateboard, your surfboard, your whatever, you know, your roller skates, you know, and all of a sudden you're laying there going, what happened? That's where we are right now in the world, Ruth. That's where we are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's another piece to it. You have to build your customer base because that's probably the biggest asset that's not on your balance sheet. And if you do it from what I call recurring revenue, you have, like, when you do your grab and go, what I'd suggest you do is you have some sort of loyalty program or some sort of program where people can join it and you send them specials and reasons to come back. And you build your customer base that way through, you know, you might have a frequent diner program, a frequent grabber program or whatever else right. It is, but you've got a customer base at that point, which is valuable and builds the wealth of your company. So if someday you decide, I don't want to do this anymore and I want to sell it, you have huge amounts of customers who actually are loyal to that grab and go.
Who is Ruth King? You've been doing this for a long time. I can tell how quickly you just on your game. Tell the world about Ruth King just for a minute.
Ruth King helps companies get and stay profitable and build wealth. And the reason I wrote Profit or Wealth was because so many of my clients initially looked at it, oh, I only have to be profitable. Yeah, that's a part of it. You also have to build the business wealth. I'm not talking about investments in a personal perspective, but also from a business perspective, you have to build the wealth in your business to be able to do what you want and have the freedom to make choices for the long period of time. So my mission in life, my goal in life is to have the light bulb go on and people truly understand profit and they truly understand cash flow and they truly understand wealth, and they can at that point give away a piece of it to help some others. That's me.
I love it. www.profitorwealth.com. That's the name of the book. Ruth King is with us. We're going to come back and learn some more. Love the wisdom. We'll take a little break. It's Entrepreneur Weekly.
Sister, know the water's sweet, but blood is thicker.
Well, you're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. I'm Alan Taylor, Entrepreneur Magazine on newsstands everywhere and entrepreneur.com on the web. Talking to Ruth King. She is the author of Profit or Wealth. Big the or. Profit or Wealth. And we're talking about, well, what you better know if you're in business. Don't get out over your skis. You get all giddy because, oh, we're making a profit. We're making a profit. You go out and you buy a new car and you buy new things that you really don't need and you make improvements before you put away a little for a rainy day or for a smoky day or a fiery day like we're having right now. Ruth, can you talk a little bit about, well, how you discovered the rules to business wealth?
I have clients as guinea pigs.
Oh!
In all reality, that's what they are.
That's funny.
And yeah. They made the mistakes. I helped them through what they were going through. And the rules just kind of came out as a result of it.
Right.
And the reality of the situation is they're really not hard. They're really easy to follow. One of the most interesting ones is to build recurring revenue. And we talked about that with your grab-and-go
right.
Restaurant type things. But that's one thing of wealth. The other thing is to save money. And everybody goes, well, I can't save money. Yeah, you can. For every check that comes in the door, you save 1% of it. All right? You get $1,000, you save $10. You're not going to miss the $10. But over a period of time, that $10 turns into $20, it turns into $50, it turns into hundreds, it turns into thousands. And the key, you know, as you said in the introduction of this, is not to spend it. I mean, you get $25,000, $30,000, $50,000 in there, and don't go to what I call the big boys or the big girls toy store because you had a really phenomenal year. Save the money, and you never know when you're going to need it. You know, perfect example of this is one of my clients ended up in a lawsuit, and he prevailed, but it cost him $800,000, and he had the $800,000 in his savings account,
wow.
So it did not kill his company. All right.
Wow.
Everybody says, why do you have $800,000 in your savings account? He goes, I don't know. I might need it. Well, guess what? He did. And wow. He had the money. And that's the key, is to make sure that you have the money. You can put 1% away. It will not kill you. You will not miss it. The thing that is important is that you do it. So
yeah.
If you have a deposit for $1,000, you have a check or transfer into your savings account for $10 every time you do that. And get used to it.
You know, that takes an incredible amount of discipline. And, you know, along the road of life, I've always had my core business that I do. And then I always have some sort of a crazy little side hustle, whether it's buying and selling a car, or a boat or an airplane. Or I have bought and sold anything and everything I could possibly get my hands on. And that's my side hustle. I've always been kind of a moneymaker. I mean, it's a gift, right? So my side hustle money continues to grow. One time, my bricklayer came to me and he says, hey, you know anybody that wants to buy a house? And I'm like, what are you, selling your house? He goes, no, it's not my house, but I'm going to be moving. And the lady said she'd sell me the house, take nothing down, and she just doesn't want to have renters. She wants to just sell it. And I did a little more discovery, and I went and looked at his house, and I'm like, man, that's a nice little house. So I said, well, can you introduce me to this lady? And he's like, yeah. So I went over, and I took my wife, and we went, and we met the lady, and we said, you know, I know you got Joe over here. You made him the offer. We would love to buy the house. And she goes, well, I was going to offer it to somebody at my church. And I go, look, I get that, but here's the deal. I'm willing to put $5,000 down to show you that I'm putting my money where my mouth is. I'll fix the house up. We'll be good renters. Here's our credentials. This is my wife. I got children. This is my retirement, this house. And the lady kind of laughed. You know what? She sold it to us. This was about 10 years ago. And we recently sold it and made $150,000 on it. And now we're going to invest that into something else. $5,000. Okay, we put $20,000 in it before we sold it. So $25,000 turned into $150,000. That's good return on investment. That's from my side hustle. But a lot of people think, you know, they only have to take it out of their business. But you see more and more people with a side hustle. Can you give me your thoughts on having a little side hustle?
I would absolutely have one, because you probably, you know, at some point in time, if your business is doing well and all of your procedures are in place, the last thing that I want and a business owner to do as they're growing is get bored. So your side hustle will keep you active and keep your mind going when your processes and businesses are doing well and you don't have anything to fix. I mean, entrepreneurs get in trouble when everything is working well and they get bored because there's nothing to fix. There's nothing they can lay their hands on and just go, all right, I need to work on this. It's all working well. Let it work well. Go do your side hustle.
I love you. I'm going to make my wife listen to this, because she's always saying, why do you do this? And I go, because I get bored. Oh, Ruth, you validated my side hustle. Thank you very much. Don't go anywhere. We're going to come back. Her book, Profit or Wealth, you can find it at profitorwealth.com. RuthKing.info if you want more information on Ruth. She's been doing this for 40 years. You may have seen her on television, MSNBC's It's Your Money program, or, you know, different television shows and radio shows across the world. She's also got a podcast. We'll talk about that in the next segment. This is Entrepreneur Weekly.
I won't lose no sleep on that, because I've got a plan. You're beautiful.
You're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
She's been doing this stuff for 40 years, helping people, you know, learn the difference between profit and wealth. So her book is called Profit or Wealth. Her name is Ruth King. Ruth, so many questions, so many things to talk about. I love your authentic way. You have a podcast. Can you tell us about your podcast?
My podcast is called Contractor Sense, C-E-N-T-S. And it's literally for contractors. Other people who have other types of businesses can actually learn from it. But I specialized it in that particular industry because I have a great deal of experience working with contractors. And I love the name Contractor Sense. If we want to call it Business Sense, we can call it Business C-E-N-T-S. But it's, for all intents and purposes, it's Contractor Sense. You can get it on iTunes, Podbeam, whatever, just about all of them carry it. And if you want to listen to it, it's 20 minutes in the car. That's it. It's done. One concept per thing. Implement it, and you'll increase your wealth, and you'll increase your profitability.
I love it. Okay. I notice here in the notes somewhere, which I have lost, but I don't need to have a note to be able to resonate with what I'm about to say. When you're dealing with accountants and people like that that speak their own language, and you hear the Charlie Brown teacher go, wah, 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 you know, and it's babble to most of us that are going, did I make a profit? Well, you did, but. So how do you make sense? How does a, you know, the layperson that didn't, like a lot of us, didn't go to school and get a big degree. We just started working, and guess what? We worked hard, and people noticed how hard we worked, and we had a great attitude, and we worked, and we worked, and we worked, and we made a profit, and we saved some money for some wealth, and we now get to this point where we rely on these people to tell us how to be wise with this, but it still sounds like wah, 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 Charlie Brown. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Now, one thing that we need to remember is that accounting was invented, so to speak, somewhere between 1200 and 1300 by the Italian monks who had to take care of the rich Italians' money, and they didn't have QuickBooks, and they didn't have a calculator. Yeah, the Chinese had an abacus, but they weren't talking to the Italians at that point. They had to make it easy. They had to make it addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division, and that's it. So the accountants these days come up with these fancy terms for things that you can make really, really easy, and profit or wealth is written in English. It's not written in accounting babble. And the other thing that I would also say is that your responsibility as a business owner, as an entrepreneur, is to review financial statements. You do not have to know the debits and credits. You need to be able to look and say, okay, that looks wrong. Give me the backup for that. You know, I never, and all of my clients, I say this to all of them, I don't expect you to become a bookkeeper. I don't expect you to do debits and credits and make sure everything balances from there. I do expect you to understand what a P&L and a balance sheet actually mean and what they say, so that you can spot minor issues before they become major crises. Mm-hmm. And that's it. They do not have to have the intricacies of you know, a bookkeeper or something along those lines, but they can delegate the responsibility, can't abdicate the results.
talk about trust. How do you find this person? Your buddy says, hey, you know, my accountant, he's great. You know, why is he great? What makes him or her great? How do I establish trust with this person when I don't know the psychobabble or the babble that they're talking?
The psychobabble. Yeah, that's true. The psychobabble. Yeah, absolutely. You know? All right. Number one, before you get to a CPA or an accountant, usually you need a bookkeeper first, somebody who's going to send out your bills, to your day-to-days and things along those lines. And I have a bookkeeping test that anybody who has any knowledge of bookkeeping should pass and do in 5 or 10 minutes. And I'm happy to give it free to anybody. Just go to my website, ruthking.info, and I will send it to you. I just don't want you to make the mistakes of hiring a bookkeeper who's going to steal from you.
Yeah.
That's not the idea here.
It happens, yes.
All right. Once you understand the P&Ls and the balance sheets, you're going to be a lot wiser with your accountants. Because they can go, well, da 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 da, but did you notice this? Did you notice what was going on with our P&L and what was going on with our balance sheet? Yeah, we made a profit, but where's the cash? Because profits and cash are not the same thing. And you understand all of these things. Remember, it's not hard. I guarantee you everybody who's listening to us has done something harder. Remember the first time, if you're a golfer, that you played golf, or the first time you played tennis, or the first time you did something that you absolutely love and you were horrible at it. You were awful at it. But what did you do? You worked at it until it became second nature to you. I made this comment to a physician, and I said, it was like your first day of anatomy class, and it just clicked, because the first day of anatomy class is really awful.
Yeah, right.
But it got easier.
Do me a favor. Give me about 30 seconds on the importance of your gut feeling about life and about business and all these things, because I live by my gut feelings.
So my gut feeling is this. If you've been doing this as long as I have been doing it, you see everything, the good, the bad, the ugly, and you get a sense. Like, I can get a sense walking into a client right now to know if their bookkeeper is stealing from them. Mm. You get the sense of it. You just absolutely do it. So once you have a lot of experience, and once you've done it, and you've made the mistakes, and you've got the gray hair like I have, or maybe, you know, that type of thing, you've been through the school of hard knocks, you learn from all of it, and when something comes up, you can really trust your gut. You know, my dad always used to say to me, when that little voice in the back of your head is saying this and you ignore it, you're going to be in trouble.
That's right.
Always.
That little voice is called intuition. That comes from the man upstairs. Don't doubt that. RuthKing.info, ProfitOrWealth.com. That is also the name of her book. You rock, Ruth. Thank you.
My pleasure. I hope I helped.
You did. I love you. We'll be right back. Now I'm a believer, not a trace
of doubt in my mind. Stay tuned. There's more Entrepreneur Weekly after these messages. Listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
So I am also an entrepreneur. Yes, I get to be one of the voices for the brand Entrepreneur, entrepreneur.com on the web, this radio show Entrepreneur Weekly, and Entrepreneur Magazine, Entrepreneur Media, all under the big umbrella. As an entrepreneur, like many other small businesses, I got a PPP loan, Paycheck Protection. Want to make sure that I save some of those jobs, because listen, as the world got crazier and crazier and the pandemic got, you know, and the smoke got thicker and thicker and things slowed down a little bit. Thank God, you know, that our government had the brains and the wherewithal to create some sort of a little bit of a safety net. So, you know, here now we're going to be coming to the point where we'll have to pay it back or hopefully have it forgiven. So our guest right now, his name is Brock Blake. He is the CEO and co-founder of the largest marketplace for business loans. It's a company called Lendio, Lendio.com on the web. And they, by the way, let me just read this here. It says they put out over 100,000 PPP loan approvals, funding over $8 billion, saved $1.2 billion. million jobs. Congratulations on that. What an awesome thing to do, to be able to save that many jobs and facilitate that many loans. Oh my gosh, Brock, that must have been a monumental task, you know?
Thanks, Alan. I'll tell you what, that's probably the highlight of my career thus far, is the impact that we have
on
so many business owners in a time of need. Just was incredible.
Yeah.
A lot of pain along the way, but it was worth it.
So tell the world, do the elevator pitch about Lendio. I said, the largest marketplace for business loans. What is Lendio in a nutshell?
When you think of a business owner, they need capital to grow their business in many cases. And so, we use these marketplaces. We use Expedia for hotels. We use Yelp for restaurants. We can go and comparison shop. But we didn't have a lot for business loans, or we didn't have anything. So in 2011, we launched Lendio, which gives the business owner the ability to go to one place, complete one application, and get access to over 300 lenders. They can look for SBA loans or equipment loans or lines of credit or term loans all in one place, and they could comparison shop their loans and choose the one that's the best fit for them. It's free for the business owner. We get paid by the lender.
Mm.
So our goal, we say, fuel the America dream, which means giving them the capital they need to grow their business.
Well, I remember once upon a time seeing Lendio and looking, and I'm going, man, that's smart. Now, fortunately, I didn't have to use the services, but I thought it was really smart at the time. Now I can see that, of course, in 2011, things were just beginning to recover. Good timing on that. And I'm sure you've had some really good years along the way. And all of a sudden, here we are now. Pandemic, economic breakdown. And then this PPP loan thing comes along. Were you guys ready for that? I mean, I'd love to hear a little bit more about what it was like. That must have been a tidal wave of people putting in applications.
Oh, it was. The business was growing healthily quarter over quarter, and all of a sudden we hit mid-March, and the lending community just stopped, came to a screeching halt. No business owners were getting loans, and rightfully so. Lenders didn't know how to price risk. And we start, paying attention to what's happening with Congress. They're talking about the stimulus package. And I sent a message to my board one day when I realized there's going to be this Paycheck Protection Program. And it's a Winston Churchill quote that talks about, there will be this moment in someone's life where they are figuratively tapped on the shoulder to do something that they were born to do. And it's their moment, and how sad it would be if they were not prepared to, I'm paraphrasing, they were not prepared to actually deliver in that moment. And I sent that to our board, and I said, this is going to be our moment. There's no one who's positioned better to help small businesses in America than Lendio. And we went all in. We took some major risks. We decided we were going to take our entire organization, we had 250 team members, dedicate them to preparing. We had about 10 days to get ready. And get ready meaning it was changing day to day.
Right.
The rules were changing. The application was changing. Everything was changing. But we were just going on faith. We're going to do as much as we can. We had 200 new team members, all work from home.
Wow.
Shipping workstations to their house and onboarding and training. And we added 250 new lenders, banks and credit unions who didn't know how to accept an application online. Everything they had done prior to that was done in a branch or through paper. So we onboarded them and got their legal agreement in place. And we added 100 new partners of groups that wanted to help their small businesses get a PPP loan. And the first weekend, there was more volume. And I was on CNN and CNBC the day that it launched. And we had more volume. We had 1,000 times more volume that day than we'd had on any other day.
Oh, my gosh.
And our systems, everyone around us was crashing. And it was a legitimate miracle that our systems just held up to that amount of traffic and people uploading documents and driver's license and all the information that's needed for that PPP loan.
Right.
And what was interesting, this is a short part. we had all these lenders who wanted as many loans as they possibly could. But after one weekend where they got so overwhelmed, by Tuesday the following week, we actually went from 300 to zero. Those, in other words, they were using our technology to fund their own customers, but they said, we are not going to take on any additional customers.
Oh, my gosh.
And we had this huge segment of customers who there were their bank wasn't offering PPP loans. They were not approved for an SBA, or they chose to prioritize someone else.
Right.
And so we had this segment of business owners that were so completely underserved, and they were at a disadvantage. And we decided right then, that's who we're going to help. We're going to help those business owners find a lender that will offer a PPP loan. And we scrambled for a few days just thinking, man, we've got these thousands of clients. We don't have a lender for them because none of these lenders will take on a new customer. It was about the next week, by Wednesday night or Thursday night. It was 11 p.m. here, 1 a.m. Eastern. And I cut a deal with a lender that said they would take on as many customers as they possibly could.
Wow.
And that opened up an opportunity. And anyways, we flew pretty close to the sun during that time, but we ended up helping over 100,000 businesses to secure $8 billion. And we say it at Lendio, we changed our mission from fueling the American dream to saving the American dream, just because so many of them were desperate and
that's awesome.
And needed that capital.
That's a great story.
Incredible.
Dude, seriously, great story. Brock Blake, CEO, co-founder, Lendio, Lendio.com. We're going to come back and find out about something called PPP fatigue. Yikes. Yeah, I'm sure you have it still. We'll take a little break. You're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly.
Can't get enough of Entrepreneur Weekly? Check out our podcast on iTunes for even more content. Subscribe today.
Well, you're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. I'm Alan Taylor. We've been talking with Brock Blake, who's the CEO and co-founder of Lendio. Lendio.com, the largest marketplace for business loans. So you can go out and comparison shop. It's brilliant. Over 100,000 PPP loan approvals and $8 billion in funds. And they've saved, they've helped save 1.2 million jobs, which is fantastic. So the question is, you heard his story, and he had to do all this in a very, very, very short time. And they kept on changing the rules and changing the applications. Pure insanity. So at what point, Brock, did you get PPP fatigue as a lending institution?
Well, you know, I think that towards the end, you know, we were about 4 to 6 weeks where we were going literally 20 hours. You know, sometimes you say we work 20-hour days, but these were literally 20-hour days.
Yeah.
For about 4 to 6 weeks straight, seven days a week. And so the exhaustion was real. But, the fatigue is more, and we were quite motivated. We, towards the end, we were talking about no business left behind. You know, there's all these businesses that haven't got a PPP loan, and while everyone else is kind of stopping, someone's got to help them. So that was our goal. But really, the fatigue has just come from the challenge that's happening in Washington. You know, they're changing the rules all the time. They are it's paused, and then they go and approve another round, and then, you know, they say it's not, another round's not going to come, and they're fighting between Republicans and Democrats. And even now, most businesses in America have used their PPP loan. They're still in quarantine. So to no fault of their own, the government is really significantly hurting the business. And they're playing politics in Washington.
Right.
And so, you know, for the fatigue is just, it's let's focus on the economy. Let's focus on Main Street. Let's come together and remove politics and do what's in the best interest of these business owners. And that's where we really hear about it from our lenders, is they just like, you know, the rules keep changing. Are we in? Are we out? Is there another round?
Right.
So anyways, that's a big part of when I think about fatigue. That's what I think about. It's just the lack of clarity that's happened.
Here's what I see just 30,000 feet. Here's Brock Blake and his team going, oh my gosh, the game has just changed. Everybody, you know, take off your your football helmet and your football gear, because we're going to all go scuba diving now. I mean, it's that different. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's still a full contact sport. It's only underwater. You know, it's like, oh my gosh. So you pivoted. But what I like about what you did, and what I think it is so important, is that you were not greedy. I can only imagine that you were, you know, I mean, look at everybody, we got to earn money. You got to get paid for what you do. But you were willing to earn a fraction of what you would normally get paid to be able to fulfill the same amount of work, to earn a fraction of the money for the people, because it's saving America, in essence, because saving all these businesses. It's like throwing out the life jackets to people. If you don't save the people, then you got nobody to serve, right? So I love what you guys did, is that you decide, all right, look, we'll make it up in volume because you're going to have a tremendous volume. But I imagine it was only a tiny little percentage that you guys got to make. Am I right?
Yeah, well, the government defined the agent fee, and that's what, you know, partners like us get, referral partners, and it was about a tenth of what we normally get on a loan.
Right.
So small as a quarter of a percent on a loan, or a half a percent up to a 1 point on a loan. And so, and the margins were so skinny, we hired all those people and everything else, and it was less about that. You know, none of us are altruistic. I don't want that to come across like, you know, but it was more about, let's take as care of as many customers as we can and build a relationship with them, and hopefully we gain their trust.
Beautiful.
So after PPP, they're still in business, and when they need a loan, they think, well, Lendio took care of me when I needed it most. When my bank said no, Lendio reached out and helped.
Love it.
Hopefully there's some credibility and trust built, and we can build a long-term relationship. And you know, as we grow this business, we'll have a lot more customers that we can help along the way when they need, you know, one of their normal loans.
I got to tell you, that is the very spirit that every one of these little businesses, small, medium businesses, and because medium is like, what, up to $10 billion in business. That's a big business. But if everybody could have that attitude that you just described, that attitude will change the world. And you have help to do that. 1.2 million American jobs. I commend you and Lendio. We're going to take a little break, come back and talk about this PPP forgiveness. We've got the largest marketplace for business loans in America, the president and CEO, co-founder of Lendio, Brock Blake. We'll be right back.
The sky comes falling down for you. There's nothing in this world I wouldn't do.
Are you paying too much for business insurance? Do you have critical gaps in your coverage? Entrepreneur Insurance can help you find out. In 6 out of 10 policies, business owners are paying too much for property, general liability, or workers' comp insurance. Entrepreneur Insurance can help you identify ways to save and any gaps in coverage. Head to entrepreneur.com/insurance to complete the questionnaire and get a personalized quote. It's an easy way to find out if you're paying too much. Again, that's entrepreneur.com/insurance.
You're listening to Entrepreneur Weekly. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
I love the kindness in the heart of the man at the top of Lendio. Brock Blake, he's my guest right now, CEO and co-founder, the largest marketplace for business loans. And so if you got a business loan like I did, you know, is it going to be forgiven? There needs to be a balance between compassion and accountability. Maybe you could, you know, shine a little bit of light on what's the future of these, of the forgiveness. I mean, should they be forgiven automatically? What do you think, Brock?
Yeah, so there's a lot of debate around this, and in my opinion, you know, if you look at the context of PPP loans, there were some rules that were laid out to small business owners on what they would need to do to get the loan forgiven.
Right.
They
right.
use the money on payroll, they use it on rent, they use it on utilities and some of those things, then any of those expenses used for those items should definitely be forgiven. Now, the question is, now on the flip side of that, there are a lot of businesses, there's a report that there are thousands of businesses and or people, and for literally nearly $1 billion or more, that was fraudulent, where people came in and they were deceptive on, because everyone was trying to dole out the money so quickly.
Right.
And so, you know, to me, there's a real balance between, you know, did you use this? This is taxpayer money. It's all of our taxpayer money going out to these small businesses. And I want to make sure that that money has been used appropriately,
right,
used as the program was outlined.
Was intended, right.
I definitely think that there is this balance. Can you, and most, some people are talking about it's either 100% all of them are forgiven, or, you know, you require this long drawn out, you know, forgiveness application where you have to document everything. And I don't believe in ors. I'm a guy who believes in ands, right? I believe you can have the loan forgiven and create some accountability. Can you streamline an application to show, hey, here's how I documented how I used the money. Maybe there's a requirement to save your expenses in case there's an audit, but provide some accountability that we use that appropriately. And if we did, then 100% should be forgiven of that loan. And if not, perhaps, you know, if they've been using it fraudulently, or they used you, you read these stories that they went and took the money and went and bought a Lamborghini.
Right.
And they're driving off in the sunset. Now, if that happened, I don't want my money to go to pay for someone's Lamborghini. I would hope that they can't document those expenses, that they would also have, they would require me to pay that loan back.
Yeah. So,
the power of and, that's my opinion.
I agree 100%. Compassion with accountability. Now, because listen, first of all, every one of these people listening to our show right now, if you're an entrepreneur and you're in business, you have to have a bookkeeping system and process in place. When you ask for that money, there's a chance you may have to pay it back. You better be ready for that. They didn't say, free money, come get it, do what you want with it. There was a set of protocols that went along with getting that money, and you have to now abide by those protocols that are in place, which means you got to be able to show some books, and legitimate books, not cooked books. So I used it for exactly what we said we would use it for. And you know what? I was very thankful that we got that money. It wasn't a lot of money because we only have a little company, but I have friends that got millions of dollars, and I'm like, wow, I hope they have good bookkeepers. That's all I could say, because I do believe that,
right.
Right? But you know what? I'm really impressed with you, Brock, with Lindio, with what you guys are doing, the spirit of what you are trying to do in this world. And of course, look, you want to make money, you're making a profit. It's part of the business. But when the going got tough, man, you gathered your team together and you did what it took. Congratulations. That's got to just feel good.
Yeah, thanks, Alan. I appreciate it. It is something that you never kind of think that you're going to experience something like that. And in the moment, you know, there are times where you feel like the moment's too big and you're going to make it through. And there were some real challenges. But in the end, just the feeling. And we've had now over 7,000 customers come back and give us reviews and video testimonials and thank you notes and cards. And when you just think about the lives of these business owners and the way that you helped them make it through and keep, you know, team members employed, and when it boils down to that person and their business, oh man, it's gratifying. It's an incredible experience.
Well, the good thing is, Americans, we're tough. We have big hearts. And you know what? Brock Blake, you have a big heart. You have a good heart. And Americans love following a man or a woman, a human being with a good heart. So you guys have just heard from the CEO and co-founder of Lindio. It's the kind of guy I like to do business with. Lindio.com. We're not sponsored by them. I just did an interview. You heard it. I haven't never spoken to this man in my life. This is a guy I will do business with. Thank you, Brock.
Thanks, Alan. Thanks for having me.
We'll see you guys next week right here on Entrepreneur Weekly.
This program is copyrighted by Entrepreneur Media Incorporated.